Thanks to our sponsor, Walker Digital, who've stepped in to help the Numbers Game podcast with their social media. Walker Digital are a digital marketing agency covering strategy, content, video, implementation, and education. The team at Walker have spread the word of our clients and love working with businesses doing good things, helping them to grow and reach more people so they can scale and get larger. I know personally, the first thing I did when growing our business was to outsource social media, blogs, and copywriting because I knew it was something that was not the best use of my time, and the team at Walker Digital smashed it. Sometimes you need to walk before you can run. Find out more at their website, wlkr.digital. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed. Welcome to episode 32 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jason and I'm here as always with my trusty co-hosts Nick Riley and Marty V. How are we going today, gents?
I am fired up, Jace. I'm seeing people back in restaurants. I'm seeing people working again, doing what we do well, mate. So I'm feeling pretty good. Nick, how are you?
I'm good, Marty. Look, a little tired. Not sure if anyone's picked it up yet, but you will. But Jace has a little bit of a croaky voice. We managed to get out for dinner last night. Couple of beers and a couple of wines and whatnot. And it was good. It's a great experience. Jace texted me before, what do we wear? I've forgotten how to go out. Do we wear jeans or do we have to wear a suit? Like, what sort of functions is? So, yeah, it was good. But we had a lovely dinner and paying for a little bit today. But that's okay. We'll push through. Hoping you can pick us up and drag us through the mud, mate.
Yeah, mate. Good on you, boys. Well, look, just to fill you in on what I did, I put the bins out. It was recycle night, so there were two bins. Very exciting. So, let's get into it. Let's play.
On today's episode, guys, what have you got for us, Nick?
I'm going to talk about vision, and I think we're all going to talk about vision, but the thing I'm going to focus on in losing it is the cost of not having a vision and then not communicating it to you, to your staff or your team.
Yep. How about you, Marty?
I'm going to talk about, is it better to diversify or specialize when we're thinking about investment, which is, I think, will be interesting. And fixed rates are on the rise, so I'm going to go into a little bit of that as well. Jace, what have you got for us?
Beautiful, Marty. Mate, I'm going to ask some of the hard-hitting questions around vision just to keep things interesting and going. But one of those ones I want to ask is, does your personal vision need to align with your business vision, or can they be separate? So, I'm excited for it, guys. It's going to be a great episode.
Let's play.
Reading the play today, industry insights, interesting facts, pieces of advice and things that have caught our eye. Mate, I'm going to throw to you first up, Marty. While Nick and I wake up and get some coffee into our veins after last night, please, would you take the honour of starting reading the play, Marty?
Well, someone has to. Wake up, kids. Wake up. You got a lot to say here today. Well, today I want to talk about... I've been watching a bit of Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, Berkshire Hathaway, and just looking at strategies of people older than me that have done pretty well. And the thing that was consistently coming up was, is it better to diversify or specialize? And they say this great comment that diversification protects you from ignorance. But they also say if you're not willing to put in the time, then you should diversify because you're playing the averages, which makes sense, and you can still do very well. But it was really interesting that they have 70% of their stock holdings in Berkshire Hathaway is held in four companies, which I found quite surprising. American Express, Apple, Bank of America, and Coca-Cola. And I love their way of investing. So they look at investing in great companies that are continuously driving gross revenues, driving gross profits, and they always look to buy those investments when it's 30% undervalued based on the actual company returns. And I thought, it's such a discipline that they follow. Like, if it doesn't meet their criteria, then they just won't invest. But when it meets their criteria, they're all in on quality companies. And I just think, like, I find that even in the finance game, you can be general and do a lot of different finance transactions, or you can really specialize doing finance for Medico and be really, I think the more specialized you are, the more traction you can actually get. So I thought that was a really interesting point that I was looking up. And the other thing I was thinking about was they said you want the company to have a distinct advantage in the market that no one can really duplicate. And there's some of the criteria they look at in their investments. But I thought even that alone, because they don't run like EFTs or they're not hedge fund managers, they're a holding company. But I think even looking at a business in that way, there's some really great takeaways from that. But again, the discipline to stay in your lane. Like you said, if you're playing cricket and you know you're edging to second slip every time, don't play the bloody shot. Wait till it's in the sweet spot and then take your swing. And I think that's the big lesson there. Patience, patience, kids, patience. So what do you think about that? Does it make any sense to you?
Makes total sense. And I think, didn't they just make a big investment into who, Marty?
Alibaba.
That's what I read.
Yeah, so Alibaba, Charlie Munger didn't do an investment for about 6 or 7 years, I believe, or a major investment, and he put something like 37, is it million?
Million. Whatever. Yeah. It was a million, yeah.
Yeah, 37 million into Alibaba because he thinks that Alibaba will control the Chinese economy. It's very similar to Amazon, and he says it's come back from 300 plus a share down to 158, and he bought in at around 220, I think it was 227 or 238, around that mark. But he's just looking at the long-term game because they've got cloud computing. They've got a lot of different things that haven't been valued in that equation. But really interesting. He bought in at his price where he was willing to buy, and he won't even get to see the value of that exploding in 10 years' time because the bugger's 95 or 96 years old, but that's his philosophy. He sticks to his criteria.
And was that him personally or was that Berkshire Hathaway?
That was him personally.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just looking at Berkshire Hathaway's share price. So for anyone that's interested, because a lot of people hear about Buffett and whatnot, but you can actually buy, if you want to get access to all this, you can just buy stock in Berkshire Hathaway, which over the last 5 years is up 81%, so not too bad, but not crazy.
Yeah.
$492 for a share.
Oh, no, it's $458,000 for an A-grade share in Berkshire Hathaway around that mark.
That's what I'm reading. Wow.
But you can buy Berkshire Hathaway B, which is around the $270, $280 mark. And that was really clever because what they were finding was people couldn't afford to invest in that larger sum to buy one share. And all these EFTs started springing up and these consultants saying, oh, you can buy a small portion of the share. It was packaged up differently. So they said, we'll reallocate a B-level share because we still want to keep our sophisticated investors because we like them, but we'll do a B-grade share, which trends at a similar type of percentage rate in increase, but it allows people to buy in directly. And then they reinvest that money. But they're very clever because they're cashed up at the moment because they feel that the market is overheated. And what they do is when their own share, Berkshire Hathaway share, goes down and it's 30% less value than what they think it is, they buy up their own shares. Very, very clever strategy, very simple strategy. It's just they know how to execute time and time again. So, I just think it's fascinating. They're very disciplined.
That's awesome, Marty. Well, continuing on, you mentioned ETFs. You did say EFT there.
Oh, sorry.
ETF.
ETFs.
All good.
I only had 4 hours sleep too.
Yeah, I was going to say, got up too early, take the bins out. Going back to crypto, so you know, obviously none of us have an idea about crypto, but we keep bringing it up, which is interesting. But for those that don't know, ASIC has recently approved crypto ETFs and there's a company called BetaShares. A lot of people would have heard of BetaShares, but large provider of ETFs for all different types of asset classes. On the news from ASIC that crypto ETFs were approved, BetaShares have now released a crypto ETF, which means as a share purchase, or you can go onto the ASX and buy a share in that ETF, and it will hold businesses that are involved in the crypto market. So it is still illegal for ETFs to hold actual cryptocurrency. So they can't hold Bitcoin, they can't hold Ethereum, what they can hold is companies that are involved in crypto. So an example of that would be a blockchain business. So it's a really good way if you're like me and you don't want to start going down the rabbit hole of crypto and how to set it up, how to buy the currency. If you don't want to actually hold the currency as well, but you want to have some sort of exposure to this hype that's going on, investing in the companies that are involved in the crypto industry is probably a good way to do it. And now you can do that by buying an ETF that will roll a few of those companies up. And second, it will also give you diversification across more than one business instead of having all of your money in Bitcoin or Ethereum or, you know, one coin. So a really interesting stat. The day that the ETF hit the market, $42.5 million was traded on the ETF, which is five times the largest amount previously traded on an ETF day one. So crazy wow. stuff. But I actually like it. I'm going to have a look at it because, again, these businesses, as long as crypto keeps doing what it's doing, these businesses will go well. And their growth, while not might not be exactly aligned with crypto growth, it will grow as the price of crypto goes up and becomes more common amongst us all.
It's funny, we sat there 30 episodes ago when we started talking about what we're going to do on this podcast and we said, we'll never talk about cryptocurrency. Let's never talk about it. And I think we've brought up cryptocurrency in almost every single episode since. So if that's a sign of the times and a sign of where cryptocurrency is heading, interesting space. And even, you know, just cryptocurrency and like what goes around it, blockchain in itself. You know, we talked about the ASX moving to use blockchain to record the buys and sells for shares. Blockchain as an element of cryptocurrency, there's so many test cases and use factors of what that can be used for. Really, really interesting space, Nico. I like it. I like it, Nick.
And with the EFT and crypto, and I've said it before, it's not the people mining for gold that get rich, or they might be minimal, the ones that get rich. It's the companies that are selling the pots and pans that make the money. And I'd much rather have a piece of those businesses that are putting that crypto out there. That makes more sense to me. And I think that's a great way to invest if you're going to dip your toe in the water. Fantastic.
ETF. I can see us all sitting here in a year in hoodies with our hats backwards, just talking about how much our Bitcoins went up. That's how quick we're progressing.
Speaking of hoodies and hats on backwards, I've got a bit of a thing about millennials. Am I one? I don't think I am. Am I? I'm too old now. I've got gray in my beard.
I think you are.
Am I?
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think it's the year you're born, not how grey you are.
Okay. Greggy wears his hat backwards and hoodies at work, so, you know, that makes sense that we're millennials. Guys, the article was Millennials SMF Signups Surge. So SMSF, everyone knows, Self-Managed Super Fund. If you don't, now we do. That's what we're here for, to share the info. So millennials are opening self-managed super funds at a faster rate than any other age group at the moment as they gain confidence to take control of their retirement savings. And this is urged by a new breed of online brokers. So it's getting easier to do. We're getting more and more digital. So, you know, people have got access to information and access to how to do it and be able to set things up. So this spike in SMSF establishments from younger investors was the latest indication that the generation is heavily engaging with their own personal finances. You know, taking back control of how your money is invested, you know, working towards your retirement. You don't have to wait until you're 40 or 50 or 60 to start to think about, oh, what's that money doing? People getting younger and younger are starting to want to look into that. Now, self-managed super funds, traditionally, you know, there's talk and there's websites and there's recommendations that you can only really set up a self-managed super fund if you've got a balance bigger than $300,000, I think is the new kind of benchmark of how much money you should have before you set up a self-managed super fund. And that's to do with the amount of money that then gets sucked into fees and management costs, the accountant, the auditor, and all those different things. So, the fact of the matter is, you know, the online neo brokers are making it easier and easier for millennials and Gen Z to set up SMSFs. And what the reason they're doing this is they want to expand the amount of money they have to be able to invest in their platforms. So the warning that we have here is that self-managed super funds means exactly that. It's you have to manage it yourself, and
basically, you got to do your own research. You've got to, you know, be understanding of where your money is invested. I think, Nick, you've got a lot to do with self-managed super funds in the financial planning side. You can probably weigh in here. But yeah, as well as I think you're hearing this too, we've had a lot of inbound inquiries for self-managed super funds for people that want to buy cryptocurrency. And we're probably getting a call a week from a younger people than we've ever had before calling about self-managed super fund, but literally just so they can buy cryptocurrency in their self-managed super fund.
It's a concern. And look, I think it's, in some cases, it's got merit. You know, we've spoken before about the younger people having more of an interest in their finances, which I think is absolutely fantastic. Mm. But I think what we're experiencing at the moment is very good times for quite a while now. So, you know, we go back to March 2020. It's no secret that everyone opened a self-wealth account or whatever sort of account it might have been online because the market was down. And all of a sudden, everyone's trading stocks because the market's flying and continues to fly 18 months later, nearly 2 years later. So I think everyone is very confident at the moment about share markets, how easy it is to make money. Crypto goes up. Nothing goes up in a straight line. So my concern is that a lot of people that have become traders in the last 18 to 24 months have become traders because it's been very easy to make money. You could put money in anything, in an ASX index fund, and you would have made 30 to 50% the last 18 months. So my concern is what happens when the market goes backwards. It's going to happen. It's not if, it's when, and it's not that far away given where the market is. You know, talking about
inflation.
Warren Buffett sitting on a stack of cash at the moment because he thinks the market is a bit toppy. So it's going to be really interesting to see how people handle that who haven't been in that situation before. They've only seen good times. And I'm not trying to say don't set up self-managed super funds, but to give you an idea, if I've got a self-managed super fund, I can open a self-wealth account in my self-managed super fund name and just start buying stocks. Now,
it's a bit scary.
Well, yeah. And look, for some people, it won't be. And for some people, they'll be doing it the right way. They won't be buying stocks. They'll be buying ETFs that bundle a few stocks. They'll understand they want to hold a market, not all in on one particular stock. But I would like to look forward to fast forwarding in 12 months' time and just seeing how people handle a downturn in the market and how they get through that without advice. And I think the other concern, just one more thing, is there's so many headlines around industry funds at the moment, and industry funds or retail funds, so concerns around super funds in general, not meeting the target and the target returns, and ASIC's come out with some guidance on where the returns should be. So I think people read these headlines and think, shit, I can do it better myself.
Yeah.
You've got to understand what you're reading. You've got to understand there's so many different types of super funds out there. There's so many different structures within a super fund provider. Like we use Colonial First State a lot in our business. And there was an article about Colonial First State being one of the most worst performing super funds in the last 12 months, and all of our clients read it, rang us. Jase, you've got a Colonial First State super account. Colonial First State just houses the portfolios. It's how you build your portfolio. It's got nothing to do with Colonial First State. So it's just people taking in information, not really knowing what it might mean, is the scary thing. And I think that's forcing people to say, I can do this better myself. Look what the market's done the last 2 years. How easy is this? So yeah, there's got some merit. It's not a blanket for everyone. They shouldn't do it, but just you need to understand what you're doing, and it is self-managed. You can't dip in, dip out. There's a system to be followed, like Warren Buffett, like Charlie Munger, to make sure that you're consistently getting returns over the long term. I personally think it's a bit of a worry.
Yep, and a warning from the ATO end or from the tax side, you know, seeing the ATO activity around self-managed super funds as well. Like the compliance side of it when you are going to self-manage is exactly that. Like, you've got to make sure you lodge your tax returns on time. You've got to make sure you're signing off what your accountant has prepared and what the auditor's signed off on. That's your responsibility. You're managing it yourself. So, word of warning out there. And but I mean, that's people are doing it to get into property, and then you've got bear trust and you've got finances. It can get complicated. So
you watch out quickly. They'll jump out once there is a loss, and then they're paying additional fees. It's like, it's always the way. And when, you know, interest rates and inflation goes up, the chances of an asset coming back down is a lot higher. And we're starting to see that in the market too. Just over the last couple of weeks, we look at fixed rates on mortgages and even business loans are up around 0.5, 0.6%. Mm. So now those 2-year, 3-year, 4-year fixed rates aren't as attractive as the base variable rates or the package variable rates, which in the past is pretty normal, right? The variable rate is usually slightly under those fixed rates. So we're back to a normal status. But even in the last couple of weeks, I've seen people and clients, you know, really panic because that 0.5% on, you know, 800,000 could be an extra $5,000-$6,000 a year that they might not have banked for. You're looking at the assessment rates at the banks going up slightly, and all it really means is it's a fairer market. There's not anything to panic about, but if people, you know, if people haven't done their homework effectively, then it's natural they are going to panic because they don't really understand what the ramifications are. But it's something to really acknowledge and check in on your own personal circumstances, because those fixed rates have jumped. Variable rates are still, you know, still current, if not coming down slightly. But, you know, cost of funds are going to be more expensive. Inflation's going to rise. So make sure you're prepared. And if it does come down, get ready to shop. You know, be in a position to take advantage of that. And like Nick was saying, have an effective strategy to take advantage of those markets as well. Really important.
The strategy is a big one. And I would challenge anyone who's set up a self-managed super fund and has started trading to let us know what your strategy is. And I guarantee you it'd just be to buy stocks. But you know, a strategy and a something that offsets something else that you've invested in is extremely important to make sure that you are getting returns over the long term. And if anyone has set up a self-managed super fund and wants to learn more, Jace, the book you're reading at the moment is by Ray Dalio, I think.
Principles by Ray Dalio.
Really good book to read. If you want to read about an asset allocation that will outperform most markets over the long term, very good read.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
Next up is my favorite subject, losing it, where we learn from mistakes that we make in the market and come out better the other side. But I think today Nick's going to get us going in regards to the importance of vision in a business and even in your own life. But first of all, the consequences of not getting that right, Nick, and you've got some fascinating things to share with us today.
Yeah, and I think probably not so much not getting it right, but just not communicating it. And you know, we have a business that's growing fairly rapidly, particularly in the last few years. And you know, we're going to talk about the importance of having a vision and understanding where you're going. Geordie Morrison from our business says it well, which he's picked up from a mentor of ours. There's no point running the race and getting to the end and realizing you lost. You know, make sure you're winning that race along the way. So I think having a vision is very important, and we're going to talk about that. But what we've discovered lately, and to go back to losing it, is how important it is that to then communicate that vision with your team, whether it's a team of two or three, whether it's a team of 45, 60, 70, whatever that is. But I think when you're sitting at the top of the business as a managing director or as a sales manager or as a general manager, as our leadership team is, you know the vision and you know what's going on. So you know you're making moves that are getting you towards that vision. But if you're not communicating that with your team and helping them understand why you're making changes, they can be sitting there going, what the hell are these guys doing? Like, 1 week it's this, the next week it's that. Now we're changing this. So I think one of the things that we found is just sitting back and looking at it, we realized how quickly we were growing, number one. Number two, how many changes we were making. And then number three, how that was affecting the existing team. Now, the changes we believe are good changes, and I think the team believes the changes are good changes. But for them to adopt and for them to then want to, I guess, champion what we're doing, they need to know why we're doing it. And I think if they don't, you run the risk of having disgruntled employees that feel unsettled, that think that maybe you're making moves just for the sake of it. So one of the things we did is we sat down, we actually created a vision and we put a presentation together and we presented that to our entire team around a month ago, and we're going to continue to update that, or update the team on how we're tracking on a quarterly basis from a high level, things that they won't see. And the buy-in we got from the team, or the buy-in we received from the team after presenting that, was just fantastic. And it was almost, with some people I spoke to, it was almost like a relief, or a moment of relief saying, oh yeah, that's where we're going. That's fantastic. Mm. I'm on board. I can see why you're doing this now. And yeah, at the same time, we put our hand up and we say, not all the moves are going to be the right moves, but just be confident that we're making them to try and get to the vision. And if they are the wrong move, then we'll rectify it. And you know, we need communication between the leadership team and the employees, the sales team, whatnot. So, yeah, I think it's very important as a business owner to make sure your team know where you're heading, so that you can, number one, get their buy-in, and number two, that they're happy to adopt the changes you make. So, yeah, that's probably our learning in recent times.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, if you're not communicating that vision effectively, everyone will go off at a tangent and build their own story, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, and that's just human nature. So it really enables great employees and great team people to get on the same page as well. So you'll find that people start to get excited about the vision and align themselves to it. And you find a new level of performance within the existing team. So yeah, it without it, yeah, like Nick said, you can get people that are disgruntled, they'll make up their own stories around it, and they're not always good stories, so that you have to do more work on the back end trying to rectify. But yeah, the response was fantastic, and yeah, I was really happy the way the team responded. And even for myself, being as a part of the leadership group, it really brought great clarity, because we talk about it all the time, but to actually model it out and see it on a PowerPoint and have total direction, it gives you that next level as well, because you know where, what activities you're doing towards that bigger picture. So it becomes much more focused instead of being a wider focus. Mm. So I found that very useful, even from a leader within the group too. Yep.
And I've seen this in real practical examples, you know, working with clients. The clients that have a shared vision that's well communicated are far way more successful, or well and truly more successful than those without. And the ones without are the ones that they're stagnating, they're going backwards, they're not getting anywhere, because let's say they're hiring team members that don't get where they're going. They don't know what the vision is. So the team members leave and they're going, oh, I've invested all this money in hiring people, and they're just leaving because they don't get it, they don't understand it. And but it really comes down to the vision. The vision's in the business owner's head and it's not shared and communicated properly. So no, well done, Nick. Good losing it.
It's great
good
stuff, lesson. Nick. And I think the other thing, a lot of companies break up because of directors or leaders within the company not actually connected into the vision, and people having their own personal visions that link in. So even that vision needs to be looked at. Yeah, you know, we share it with the team once a quarter, but even amongst the leaders, it needs to be looked at every 6 months to every 12 months, because again, you want to be sure you're all invested on the same page heading in the direction you want. And I can't overstate that enough, because whenever I've seen businesses fail in the past, it's always been a shift of alignment to the vision personally. So I think that it's really important to keep communication channels open around that.
And people want to be part of something. Your employees want to be part of something. They don't,
absolutely.
Most people don't want to go to work, clock on at 9, clock off at 5 and go home and just go in the next day and do it again. They want to know what they're part of, and they want to come on the journey with you, most people. So yep. Share your vision and bring them along.
I made note here as well. I've seen marriages break down As part of the losing it, I just made a note. Like, the marriage breakdown has also come from the business owner not sharing the vision with their partner. So their partner doesn't understand why that person's working so hard or why they're stressed or what's going on in that world if they haven't actually shared where they're headed. Like, what's the purpose behind it, or why am I working so hard? What's that vision that we're working towards? And getting buy-in from your partner at home. That's also really important, because otherwise the extra stress that causes on the relationship, it's I've unfortunately seen marriages end over it.
Yep.
Exactly right. Yeah, because if there's no clear direction on the relationship and the person's just solely in the business, and you don't know why, then it just looks like it's time taken away from the relationship. So it's really important. It's something Cole and I do as well. We have a joint vision. We have a vision for our relationship. We have a vision for our family. And we also have an individual relationship with Charlie. And we have a joint family relationship with Charlie. And we ask ourselves that question, every 3 months and every year, to go, what's our vision for our family over the next 12 months? What's our vision, how we want to live each day? And what does it look like long term? What are we creating here? And if you can get answers to that, then you pretty much can align yourself very easily within the business and communicate that back and forward to the important people in your life, because ultimately that's the foundation that really matters. Because if that falls apart, then what's the point? Everyone's going to be a lot more miserable.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
It's time for the 1%ers, guys. It's those small things that have the biggest impacts in our lives. And look, I'm going to go as far as saying that our vision is not a small thing. It's big. It's pretty amazing what happens when you have a vision and set those big goals. And Nick, I want to throw it over to you to kind of start on, you know, when we did the planning, we talked about you guys have gone through some vision stuff recently and some planning around that. And I'd love to throw it over to you to kick a start and on talking about vision and why it's so important.
You're laughing at Marty. Kick a starting.
Kick it started. Kick start us.
I'm just
smiling. Smiling.
I just love it how we're just a little bit tired and every now and then we say something that just doesn't make sense. It's all good. Yeah, look, vision and it's something that we've spent a lot of time on, as I mentioned, losing it just recently. And I guess what we're going to talk about today is, as you mentioned, Jace, how important it is. And just to unpack that a little bit, why would you go to work every day, build a business, build a team, when you don't know what you're trying to achieve? And for a lot of people, particularly when they start in business, it's very hard to understand what that looks like. Because you probably start in business with a revenue goal in mind or a net wealth goal in mind, whatever it might be. That's okay. And if that is what you've got in mind, then what's the business got to look like to provide that for you? And maybe that's where your vision can start. So one of the things we spoke about earlier before we jumped in, on and started recording was, well, how do you create a vision when you just start the business and you don't really know where the business is going to be or what you're trying to achieve? So It is something that is difficult to do for a lot of people because sometimes you've got to think about things that you may or may not think are even feasible. So what I would suggest is whether you're new to business or whether you've been in business for 5 years, just take some time to yourself to spend on your vision. Now, whether that be on the weekend, for a lot of people, I know for me it's on holiday, so I'll think about a lot of things that I don't have time to think about that just – or things just pop up in my head about the business. And the vision doesn't have to be perfect. You can write the vision on one page. It can be three lines. It can be one line. Just put something down as to where you want that business to be. And then when you go into work every day, you know what you're trying to achieve. And that vision doesn't have to be a 10-year vision. It can be a 2-year vision. It can be a 20-year vision. And it doesn't have to be something that's set in stone for 10 years. Look, we've committed to revisit our vision probably every 12 months based on what we know about ourselves personally, based on what we know about our business and what we can achieve as a business, and then also based on our market that we play in. Our vision could look completely different in 3 years based on market conditions. It doesn't – for a lot of people, like, oh, vision, where do I start? Just put something down, and it doesn't have to be achievable. You might think it's unachievable, but put it down, and then the longer you're in business, the more you'll start to understand what that business can look like. And for us, it's been a game changer. You know, we talk about beginning with the end in mind. For us, it's, okay, well, that's where we want to get. If we get there, that's going to deliver everything to us that we want as individuals. So, yes, it's the end in mind, but the end could change. But as long as we're coming in and we know we're driving towards something, then we're happy to get up out of bed and to come into work every day and work our butts off because we know we're trying to achieve our vision. So,
makes such a good point, Nick. I think people sometimes talk about vision as something so far off in the future that they're not quite sure how to bring it into reality. But I see it very different. I see it that it focuses myself in the activities of the day because I can ask the question, are the activities that I'm doing today in alignment with the vision? And also, are they in alignment with me as a human being as well? So it's really powerful. And I described it the other day as almost having a torchlight and towards the vision that you're shining the light on the vision and all the activities are within the light. And you kind of see all the other ones that are in the darkness that might not have relevance but could keep you busy in the wrong directions as a distraction, you can start to put aside. So for me, it's really great because I'm thinking, holding that vision for our people as well, whether it's performance, progress, their own alignment to the vision. There's lots of things you can really get tremendous traction within yourself and within your teams when you have that vision. But when you're looking at starting a business, even if you have a vision and it's more immediate based on, like I remember starting in business and going, I wanted to build brighter futures. And what does that mean? It's because I knew the banks were charging clients an exorbitant rate back in 2000. And with education, clients could be in a much better position with the help of myself. So for me, it was building brighter futures. And then I went to work in regards to that. Now, there were certain things within that vision, like you said, you want to put food on the table, you want to replace your income. There are things you got to do from a survival mechanism. But if you can start even having that initial vision, it might only be for 1 year, and then you review it and it expands based on the growth of the business. So it's, again, it's a dynamic vision that moves forward. Now, we're at a place with the business being, you know, a lot maturer that we can branch out that vision in a longer way and we can actually put metrics around it, which is really powerful because that's also, we can recognize that that's achievable and place strategy around it. So we talk about vision, but there's still a lot of planning, ratios and metrics that now link to achieving that vision financially, and then we have the human aspect of it as well. So it's a great thing to work out and put time into. And it doesn't matter where you're at, you can do it from where you're at.
You know, from a personal experience, talking about vision and the power of the vision, when we started, you know, our first version of Future Advisory 5 or so years ago now, vision was something that we put a bit of time into. You know, we knew the importance of it and we knew what it was like for a lot of businesses that didn't have a vision. And part of that process was literally like, it's how would I describe it? A big whiteboard helped for us. We're visual. We like to be able to see things. And it was just drawing our future, like drawing the dream world of, if we built this business up to be everything we dreamed of, what would it look like? And we just did a 5-year. We drew it for, you know, kind of 5 years from where we were. And at that stage, there was 3 of us. We had no staff, we had bugger all clients, and we just started throwing stuff out there like, okay, 5 years, what if we had a team of 30 and we were in multiple capital cities in Australia and we're an award-winning accounting firm and people asked us to present at things because we were, you know, thought leaders in the industry. And we wrote all this down 5 years ago when we were nothing and with no clients. But it gave us, you know, what you said, Marty, that torch, that guiding light of what you were working towards. The fact that we actually took a bit of time to write that stuff down, then when you got into the day-to-day nitty-gritty stuff, that stuff's always in the back of your mind. Like, those decisions you're making day-to-day, are they helping me get work towards the vision? You know, if I onboard this client, is that another client towards helping me get to where I'm going? If I hire this team member, do they fit the vision of where I'm taking this company? But the important thing was, I could actually tell the people we were hiring what our business was going to look like in 5 years. And if they didn't want to be part of something that was that size or where we were going, they didn't join our firm. But the people who went, wow, that's exciting, that's really great that you've got a vision, they joined our firm when we were a team of 3 or 4 or 5. knowing that it was not stopping there and that it was going to evolve and go further. For me, I'm actually at a point where, you know, Nick, you touched on holidays as a time where you revisit the vision. Mm. You know, we were revisiting it year on year. And then I can honestly say in the last 18 months, we've barely revisited the vision. And we are now a team of 27. We trade in multiple capital cities. We won the Zero Accounting Firm of the Year. So we ticked a lot of that stuff off. I feel a little bit lost. I feel like I've lost my roadmap because I don't know what happens between year 5 and year 10. So my challenge over the December-Jan period is to revisit the vision, to go away with my business partners and bring my team in and get some team involvement and go, you know, what are our next set of goals? What are our company values? And do we all still align with this? What's our mission statement? You know, helping people have a better future. And then now we need to be forward thinking again and set some time frames around this next set of vision kind of statements and vision that we put on a page. And I think that was the other thing, the one pager, Nick. You know, what were the things that you would put on that one page document that you shared with the team? I thought I found that really, really valuable.
Yeah, so your one pager should really sum up your business. Well, in one page. So for us, it's what's our mission, what's our vision, what are our core values, or what's our values code, what are three things we're trying to achieve in the short, medium, and long term, and our unique value proposition.
UVP.
Yeah, I'm going to bring up, because this is inspiring. I think a lot of people will get a lot out of this, and we'll probably be able to build their own one pager from this. This is not ours. This is the All Blacks one pager. So most people will be familiar with the All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby side, and this is their one pager. And we use this to give ourselves inspiration for ours. But so the New Zealand Rugby Association, founded in 1892. What is their purpose, or what is our purpose? Since New Zealand is a country mixing multiple tribes, ethics and culture, the purpose of New Zealand Rugby Association is inspiring and unifying New Zealanders. So that to me is brilliant. It's got nothing to do with rugby. And you look at the All Blacks team, and that's what they do. Like, every Kiwi I know is extremely inspired and extremely proud of their rugby union side, not their league side, not their netball side, although they're very good, but this All Blacks side people always talk about. The All Blacks' mission: to promote the values of respect, team spirit, and fair play in sports. The All Blacks' vision: to be the world-leading sports team, inspiring all teams to be the best they can be. That's bloody powerful, if you ask me. And then they've got an ambition there. And I think the reason ambitions are important, particularly when you're talking about your team, you want something you can tick off, something that's tangible. So the All Blacks' ambition was to win the 2019 World Cup. So this was obviously prior to 2019. So that's something that's tangible that they can tick off and say, yes, we achieved it. Mm-hmm. This is the one I love. My legacy as an All Black: to return the black jersey to my successor in better shape than when I received it. How good's that? And their motto, I'm not going to read it out in Latin, but what it is in English is "through difficulty to greatness."
That's all on one page. I just I feel motivated and inspired by
I've got chills reading it. Like, it's just it's just great stuff. And if anyone hasn't read Legacy, which is written, I can't remember the author's name, but he followed the All Blacks team.
I've got it on a shelf out there, but I can't go get it now. But
unbelievable book. If you haven't read Legacy, read Legacy. It's just about the core values that the All Blacks hold, and it just demonstrates why they are so good as a team.
Well, we all want to play for the All Blacks now, and that's how you want people to feel about your business. And something that I've always done, like I used to do it in previous businesses, but when Nick put it out brilliantly on Canva, that's new thing. Nick's learned
that before, haven't I?
Just dominating Canva. Might be a sponsor in that somewhere. But the great thing is, I now flick through that every morning very quickly as an anchor. So it actually starts my day. So I'm operating from the foundation of the vision. Now, I used to do that with my own visions in previous companies, but it's brilliant. It actually just aligns myself with why I'm doing what I'm doing, with the team and within the business towards the bigger picture. And it's a great way to get focus and ensure my day is just as exciting now as it is when we achieve that vision. And that's a really powerful way to just set yourself up to win the day. I think I would encourage that. I'm going to encourage that for our team members too, because I think it's just a brilliant way to start.
Mm. Yeah, we used to, and you've just reminded me, Marty, and I think one of the things I love about this podcast and doing it with you guys is I get value out of it and go away and implement things, you know, even just from us. So I can only imagine, you know, hearing Nick read through the All Blacks One pager and people actually thinking, cool, I've got to implement this and I've got to go and do it. And Marty, you're talking about that, looking at that one page document as a way of starting the day. You know, thinking back to the success that we've had over the last couple of years, we're a 5-year-old business that's done quite well. We've got a long road ahead of us, and there's difficult times in good times. And one of the things that we had on, so we worked a lot remotely, and we worked from a lot of different offices. And one way of all being on the same page was that, and sorry, we didn't have walls in the office that we're allowed to draw all over and paint and do whatever, because, you know, we hired virtual co-working spaces and studios. So what we did is that one page plan was actually part of everyone's desktop computer. Every new computer we rolled out, we made sure that everybody's desktop and screensaver was the one pager of the values, the vision, where we were headed. And I forgot about that. It wasn't until you just mentioned it that, you know, a year ago, everybody had that as their desktop. And then when we rolled over into all the new computers, we didn't do it. So that's coming back. I just made note in my internal system. Everyone's going to have to, we're going to do the new vision. We're going to put it on everyone's desktop, and everybody every day is going to start their day seeing where we're headed.
Well, I've said it before, and I guarantee every business owner, every employee, 3 or 4 times a year going, why the hell do I do this? You know, because adversity happens, right? We absorb a lot of adversity and, like you said, and challenge in order to move through it to the other side. And it happens on a regular basis. But the vision pulls you forward. If you have a clear understanding of what is drawing you forward, those things are just little blips in the road, you know, because you know there's a bigger picture that you're striving towards. And I think that's really important. Otherwise, people can just dwell on those moments and blow them out, and it doesn't become anywhere near as enjoyable. So I've always found a really powerful thing to draw forward through those times, which inevitably we're all going to face regardless of where we are in a business.
Yeah, it might be worth, and I don't know, maybe we can put it out there for people to let us know for an episode to just focus on that, because I know one of the things that I struggled with was, how the bloody hell do I build the vision? Mm. Like, okay, we want to be there, but then how do I present this to the group? And, you know, we've got the luxury of having an advisory board and some people, you know, that have been involved in business for a lot longer than we have, that really guided us through. So I learnt so much putting that vision together, and I didn't really know where to start, to be honest. I sort of had the idea in my head, but how do I document this and how do I present this to the staff? So, look, I'd be happy to share some of that and unpack building that if we get some communication from people that they'd like to know more, because I know for me it was probably a 3 to 4 month process building that vision out, rewriting it, changing things, taking that out, putting that in. So yeah, be more than happy to spend an episode on that and unpack it.
Yeah, Nick, and I think you've also said that the strategy or the strategic piece of it is you need to find and make time for this. Mm. You know, if you don't have a specific vision or planning or strategy time blocked out, yep, so you can actually work on implementing this, whether you have one and you haven't revisited it, whether you don't have one at all, or whether, you know, yeah, you're starting from scratch or not, it's about making the time. And understanding just how important it is. But yeah, I agree. If, you know, get some feedback and do a further deep dive and maybe even bring in some of our advisory board people into an episode and to unpack that, I think that would
so much upside in doing it. Even like when you bring on a new team member, when you run through that vision with them, that document, it's so powerful that they can see where their alignment is and where their career progression is towards that vision. When you're then presenting to other investors or other businesses that you might want to be involved with, it just spans so many different things in business that where it gives you an advantage having that foundation piece done. Mm. So well worth it.
That's been episode 32 of The Numbers Game, talking all things vision. Plenty of takeaways there. Nick, what was your favourite part, mate?
Well, obviously vision and losing it. But I think my key takeaway was there's no more important time than you can spend on trying to work out where the bloody hell you're going. You know, you spend 10 hours a day in the office, some people take 15 minutes to just jot some things down on your vision. Do that once a month and you'll build it out over 6 months. So highly important, and the impact it can have for such little time spent is significant.
Yeah, and for me, it's you don't want to be climbing a mountain that you don't want to be climbing. Mm. So it's important to know where you're going and why you're going there. And if you haven't got a vision, you're blind to a lot of different circumstances. Mm-hmm. What about yourself, Jase?
Mate, it's the guiding light, the torch, the shining thing that I need, and the plan that I used to have that I'm lacking at the moment, that I'm now about to go back and revisit myself. I'm inspired by it, I'm motivated, and it's really given me a bit of pep that I didn't have at the start of the episode. So I'm excited, and thank you very much, guys.
Imagine how we're going to be when we get some sleep.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Cheers.
Game over.